Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
So, in 1942, when this was released, do you think that people viewed this as the original Animorphs movie?
Damn.
Like, I think this Animorphs beat everything to the punch. So we've just had an interest as a culture for so long the Animorphs. I mean, like, what if a human,
but
animal?
Also an animal. I mean, the 82 film also precedes Animorphs. So, like,
does it? I feel like Animorphs have been around since, like, I'm going to take a guess.
That feels very 90s.
I'm
going to
say that the Animorphs were introduced in 1984.
Okay. Let's see. Published date, June 1996.
Okay, way off. You're right.
That's okay. Yeah. I feel
so
like
do you
like
think this YA
90s.
Author saw the Cat People 1982 and all its, you know, erotic
horror
scenes
glory.
And everything,
yes.
And they were like, ooh, I have an idea.
But for kids.
For kids, yes.
Make
yeah.
it accessible.
Mm.
I hope so. Hello.
Hello.
I'm Brooke
How are
Sullivan.
You? You're great. You're becoming a cat.
Yeah,
it's
I am.
It's wild. You're morphing right
That's
now.
So nuts.
Sorry.
Hi, I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
And we love talking about cinema. We love talking about being queer. We love talking about queer cinema. So here we are talking about it on mic. Today we have a very special double bill of the 1942 version of Cat People and the 1982 version of Cat People.
So
lots
many
of cats.
Cats.
So many people. We're
wow.
joined by two very exciting people, Patrick Hamilton and Gina Radcliffe of the Kill by Kill podcast. We are so happy to have you here.
Hello.
Greetings and salutations.
Thank you for being here. I just have to ask
off the bat, are we all cat people or dog people? I feel like this is kind of an important thing given the subject matter.
Lay the context of how yeah. we feel about these films. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I have a cat, but I also like dogs. So mm-hmm. I guess I'm the outlier who, you know, I kind of switch back and forth between being a dog people or a cat people.
Okay, equal opportunity. We
You're
love
like
to see
a cat dog person, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm this horrible amalgamation of a cat on one side and a dog on the other. I'm more of a the thing than a cat people.
I love it.
I have traditionally been a dog person. My wife is horrifically allergic to cats and most dogs. We had to find a dog that allowed her to own one without sneezing constantly. But if I could say, the original Animorph is Manimal, from 1982 or 3 NBC, which Simon McCorkindale is a detective who uses his ability to morph into different animals to fight crime. That and rules. It was so successful, it was canceled after 13 episodes.
Ooh, I can't imagine why.
See, look, I inherently love that idea. Though. Like,
no,
I'm a
I
big
do too.
Fan of, yeah, and the Teen Titans comic series, Beast Boy, who can, like, morph into different animals and stuff. I feel like it's always such a cool power, you know? Like, what do you want to be today? How are you feeling? Are you a gorilla? Are you a dog? I don't know.
It is, like, until Simon McCorkindale drives around and not a Ferrari, because that would be ripping off Magnum P.I.
Oh my gosh.
And he very awkwardly shifts into animal form.
That's amazing.
It's one of those things that sounds great until you start watching it. And you're like, oh yeah. TV sucked in the 1980s
for a very long time. Yes.
I think we'll have to dig up a clip of this and post this on the Twitter so everyone can experience in the glory.
Yeah, I need to know.
Spreading the gospel of McCorkindale. McCorkindale.
McCorkindale sounds
what
right.
a name though in general.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, honestly, if I had been alive and a child during the 80s, I probably would have watched it, because I love cats very deeply. Jordan and I are both cat people.
Gina, ooh. I feel similarly to you, where I own a cat, but like, I had cats and dogs growing up. I would honestly consider myself more a dog person.
Wow.
In terms
but
of both personality and like animals that I'm drawn to more.
Yeah.
But I love cats. I'm like an equal opportunity lender.
There
you know
you
what
go.
I mean? I love everything.
Exactly.
It goes around.
So we have the whole spectrum, because I don't dislike dogs, but I would say that like
you're
I'm
definitely a cat
very
person.
Much a cat
yeah.
person. But I love
singular.
I love
you're not a people. You're a person.
Yeah.
Cats are a people, not a person.
I would agree with that. So I am very excited that we're covering these films today. The 42 version in particular is like a movie that I've been like waiting to cover on this podcast. So I was really happy when you guys like were drawn to this topic in general. So I have to ask, like, what is your history with like both versions of this movie? I know particularly like the 82 one you're very much fans of. Like, how did you come to learn about this? Give me the background. I want to know.
Patrick, you want to go first?
Sure. The 82 version comes in the wake of An American Werewolf in London. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, how can I get a goopy metamorphosis on camera? It was mania. And it's part of a particular summer from Universal, Universal at the time. Like, 82 is so stacked with amazing fucking movies.
Yeah.
And it kind of starts with Cat People, believe it or not. And then Videodrome comes out this year. The Thing comes out this year. Conan the Barbarian comes out this year. It's just good fucking movies. Stacked.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Whereas I think 81 ended with Heart Beeps. So it could it could only go up from there.
There was a seismic shift.
They were flatlining a little bit, you know?
Boo.
And I grew up in Southern California, and Universal was sort of my bag. It was just, it was cheaper than Disneyland. And I was into Universal Monsters because I had to explain away my overwhelming fear of absolutely everything. So I felt if I, you know, read books in the library and read Fangoria magazine, I could understand why these things frightened me so much, and they would lose their power somehow. And so Cat People was just kind of part of that. Although growing up in a Mormon household, I was no sooner coming into contact with Cat People as I would have been hopping in a car and going to the moon.
Yeah.
It was an impossible task. The original I ended up seeing much later, but of course it has those in that indelible photography and those wonderful chase sequences, that it's very instantaneous, your enjoyment of it. It's only later that you learn that the main character is without a doubt the stiffest board of wood ever photographed. Gina, what about you?
I went through a long period when I was a kid, basically renting whatever horror was available and watching it on cable. And I guess I must have been around, I'm really aging myself here, I would have been around 11 or 12 when I first saw this, and it was still a fairly recent release at the time. I think I'd seen it on home video for the first time, and it made a big impact on me, let's say. And I rented it quite a bit when I was throughout my teen years, and would watch it on cable when it came up. And I would say it was probably a formative, you know, movie in my, you know, in my burgeoning, you know, puberty and sexuality.
Yeah.
But as far as the original I only watched for the first time a few years ago, because I was trying to basically fill in the blanks of vintage horror. So I you know, got around to watching all of the Universal horror movies, you know, a lot of the Hammer movies, some of the earlier Italian horror, the Mario Bava. And I watched this one, and again, like Patrick said, there's a lot of really beautiful stylistic choices in it. But I mean, my God, this leading man in this, he is such a loaf of, you know, Wonder Bread.
Oh yeah,
a wet shoe.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes Jonathan Harker in the original Dracula look like he just had, like, you know, just smoldering chemistry. It's
Daniel
Day-Lewis. Of
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe you brought Antonio Banderas into the conversation.
Yeah, I compared. Yeah, exactly. And just like, okay, I do not believe for a second that, you know, this guy has one woman, you know, all aflutter over him, let alone two.
Let alone two. Yeah. Who are honestly waiting.
It's practically science fiction at that point. The fantasy has gone too far.
Oh, absolutely. You're like, I can believe a person turning into a panther, but you're telling me this man has two women interested in him? What?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Oliver in the 82 version, isn't a whole lot better in a whole lot of
ways. He's pretty milquetoast.
But at least he's reasonably attractive. where, you know, it seems intelligent and he's not gaslighting anybody like the Oliver and the 42 version. So yeah, that I mostly accept it.
Right, right. You're like, John Hurt has chemistry. He is a talented actor enough. You're like, I'll buy this versus, you know, a piece of cardboard on the street.
No, it's pretty, the 42 is pretty bare bones in terms of character. But
but you also have the female component of the 42 film. When you have Simone Simone and...
Great name.
Yeah. And Jane Alexander, I believe, who... not to be horny on Maine, but is absolutely gorgeous in this, not like Simone Simone, some piece of shoe leather. They are a very interesting. They pop off the screen every time they're on screen. You're like, I'm into this, and then when Oliver shows up, you're like, and him,
and he's here too. No, I felt
the
exact
same way. What are we doing here, ladies?
Yeah, well, I think it's like that is so common in so many movies, and like, you know, in this particular case, is like I think a positive contributing factor to maybe some of the undertones themes, that have been discussed, particularly about the 42 version. And also, Patrick, I would just like to say we're so pro horny on Maine, it's not even funny. And I mean, look. This, especially the 82 version, very horny movie.
Almost as if they're getting paid by the boob too.
Literally, like there's that shot, I forget when exactly it is, but like when the prostitute's her bra just like pops open.
she's so terrified her bra clasps itself.
It's like, my god, Paul Schrader, you little horny man.
He's in the midst of some sort of mammary explosion when she's clawed by a cat.
Of course.
My favorite is when Malcolm McDowell sleeps with like that woman who he picks up at the cemetery and she's chilling in bed.
Where else would you pick up someone?
Of course. I mean, dream first date. But she's chilling in bed and instead of like the classic like, oh, me like covering myself with the covers oh so elegantly, it's like everything is covered her boobs. Like it like stops right below. Gotta love it. Gotta love an 80s erotic horror. Like,
Paul Schrader,
genuinely.
The man, what it's truly one of those directors where, like, you think about, like, you know, directors, you know, their art is a reflection of who they are and their interest in everything. And it's incredible because Paul Schrader took that to the nth degree because every single movie that he does is basically the same thing and is so horny and is so about, like, either like religious undertones or these tortured protagonists, and they all have these incredibly similar arcs, but like I love them all equally
and
have a great time with them.
It's great to talk about Paul Schrader on the main feed because like we get to talk about his Facebook posts. Like a pivotal aspect of I feel like who he is as a director. It's like this weird window that you don't usually get outside of like the actual narrative film into like what these people are thinking. Paul Schrader,
man,
he doesn't make you
he gasses
guess.
Himself up more than any other. Like I would love to have his ego where he's like, okay, so I did have one of the top 10 films of the year and this movie I guess was close enough to it.
Yeah,
it's great. But Brooke, what for you, how did you like these movies? What was your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I would have never ever been allowed to have seen the 82 version in a million
would
years.
Would it have been one of the 10 movies?
And it sort of fell like by the wayside when I was a little bit older and trying to work my way through like movies I should see, because it's like
it's not really
particularly popular. It like is more of a cult hit, so I hadn't seen it until very recently for this episode. It's wild. I mean, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I love Verhoeven and like
of
everything
course, yeah.
that's like in that greater 80s trash zone.
Sexy camp.
Oh, but I say that in like the best possible
way.
I had seen bits and pieces of the 42 version in film school. Like obviously the bus sequence is like very iconic for cinema in general. And I had seen like bits and pieces and I knew more about like what the film was about and sort of how it had been like reinterpreted in later years than the actual
like reappraisal sort of
like plot. Not that there's much of a plot. So yeah, but I had never like sat down and watched it in full until very recently. How about you?
Wow, didn't see that coming. So I had only watched these two movies, obviously, for the podcast, which was, I found it kind of weird because I, which we've talked about a little bit before, but similar to you, Patrick, I have like a huge affinity for the Universal Monsters.
Mm-hmm. Can confirm.
Much grew up with them and like was such a big fan of them, and like even like going like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, you know, like all those movies are like very much in my bag. But for some reason I had like not seen Cat People, and I don't know whether it was just because of a blind spot. And we were talking a little bit off mic about this, how it's sort of, you know, in this 40s horror camp, and like some of those ones were much more like 30s horror, and like sort of I think there's the interesting arc that these, you know, B Universal slash horror movies take from like the late 30s through to like the 50s, and when you get like the sci-fi, you know, sort of schlock. And like this movie is such an interesting piece of that within that puzzle. But long story short, yeah, I hadn't seen it. I had like obviously known about like the either asexual and or lesbian coding in it, just because I feel like, you know, as we've said, like going to film school and also just like
doing this podcast around,
yeah, like this world, it was like something to like hard to avoid.
Yeah,
but it was nice definitely watching the two of them. And honestly, I didn't even know that Schrader did Cat People, because I was so familiar with like his other stuff, like America, from like Taxi Driver, American Gigolo, like all these things.
And he
but
didn't
like
write the screenplay, right?
Exactly.
For this one,
so it was kind of like a fun surprise to watch, especially then with the casts. But yeah, it was definitely interesting watching these two back to back and like seeing. I think it says something about like America in general and just like the way that the film landscape has shifted.
Oh, yeah.
Watching the two, like what was subtext in one, what was subtext in the other, sort of like the erotic elements of both. I think it's just an interesting dichotomy.
No, I agree. Yeah, it's sort of like it flip-flops, where like the 82 version is showing everything and the 42 version is showing nothing, but mm-hmm. they're both like hiding these very particular thematics
right
underneath. Yeah, that was what was like honestly most interesting to me, because like they're two extremely different movies, but like the relationship between the thematics and like how they totally. Shifted, because they're really like two very different movies about two very different
about
things,
different cat people,
but they take like the same sort of like horror of like not being able to control mm-hmm. your body, and like the sort of like toxic relationship to sex, and like use it for very different ends, which I think is always interesting to think about.
Now, I have to ask Gina and Patrick, have either of you seen Curse of the Cat People?
Yeah, it's a very different kind of film than this.
Mm.
Curse, you know, has the return of pretty much the main three cast. It's got right. Simone, it's got Jane Randolph, I call her Alexander earlier, and internationally known board of wood Kent Smith arrives.
Oh yes.
They're getting all the types of wood. You have a nice oak, you know, you have mahogany.
This time the woman he can't get along with is his daughter, and she is just sad, lonely, creepy girl who just wishes she had one friend, and the ghost of Irina shows up.
Perfect.
Whether or not that's a projection of this little girl or reality. And all of the horror seems to come with this other woman, an older actress in town, who sort of takes this young girl under her wing, but she hates her own daughter. And she's like, this new adopted granddaughter, as it were, is going to become the daughter that I wanted. And this Ooh. Other woman is just like, I fucking hate that little girl. I strangle her the first chance I get. It's just,
Lord.
It's one of these things that starts off bright and sunny with flowers and everything. And it's very domesticated as opposed to the urban cat people. And then as soon as Irina is invoked, a shadow casts over. Like, it's so beautifully photographed. Yeah.
Well, because Robert Wise directed it, and I mean, you know, like,
well, he directed half of it.
He didn't do it all.
He was actually the replacement, because he was an editor, and the original editor of Cat People was the first director of.
Got
Curse.
It. Okay.
So he does credit him with, you know, it was a genuine collaboration. He just couldn't get it done on time.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have all the hallmarks. It's the same cinematographer. So right. it's of a piece, but it's not as moody as Cat People. It's just, it's one of those things where Val Lute, it has a, which at the time, what people called jump scares, was a Lute and bus scare.
So
it has those elements, but they're it doesn't quite mix as well. It's not one of those things that should be continued. And it's hard to go, remember this cat person? Now she's a ghost. Or maybe she isn't. And it's like,
okay, sure. Yeah. So, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I love like the idea of so much of what's happening in like the 42 version, but like in that it really doesn't translate to a sequel. And I think it's much more, I don't know, maybe chilling is not the right word, but I found it to be like an effective
like
movie.
Unsettling. Yeah.
Like, but as a standalone. You know what I mean?
It is, because it becomes more of like, once you understand the concept of gaslighting, it becomes more of a psychological thriller than a, you know, a thriller about somebody who can turn into a cat person.
Right.
One of the differences, again, as you pointed out, the 42 and the 82 version, other than the basic concept of there are people who can turn into cats, they're very different. Like, in the way the original is structured is so weird. Like, he meets this girl at the zoo, and then like in the next scene they've gotten married.
They're in love. It's crazy. It's the fastest falling in love. That's like all old movies have this though. They're like, I love how quickly people fall in love and you just buy into it. You're like, oh yeah, you met at the zoo and now you're getting married. Sure.
There's a lot of yada yada yada.
Yeah, and then she's like, well, I can't kiss you, which, I mean, we know what that's a metaphor for what she's actually talking about. And he's like, well, I think you need to go to a psychiatrist. and meanwhile, I mean, the thing that, you know, had me ranting on chat and on Twitter and at the screen was that he has this assistant, Alice, who is obviously in love with him. She tells
so
him
clearly,
at
yes.
one point that she's in love with him. He's just kind of like, it'll never work out. Spoiler, it does work out for them in the end.
Yeah.
But he is, you know, she is his assistant. She's evidently his only friend. And she's his confidant, who he is basically telling, well, my wife won't fuck me, so clearly she's insane, and now I'm making her see a psychiatrist.
yep.
And like, haven't bothered to discuss it with her. Yeah.
That's a weird thing to be telling, you know, your supposedly platonic opposite sex friend about your spouse. That, you know, we're having sexual problems, so I make you go to a psychiatrist. And at one point, there's a scene where, you know, he tells Irene, oh, I've been telling Alice about this. She's fine. She understands.
Right.
Yeah, she is understandably horrified.
Yeah. And Irene's like, please don't. He's like, yeah, well, I'm going to keep talking to her about it.
You're like, asshole?
Yeah. I mean, they have there's absolutely, like, nothing holding their relationship together in the first place.
Right, they have no chemistry.
No.
Which, again...
In the apartment, guys, what brings people together more than rampant, continuous, nonstop smoking in an apartment?
Yeah, whereas, again, at least in the 82 version, Oliver isn't great, but the chemistry he and Irina have feels pretty genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see that they're, you know, very fascinated by each other. Now, you know, the films, the 82 version suggests the reason why Oliver is attracted to her is because Oliver wants to fuck a panther.
Honestly, good for him. He's kind of valid for that.
You know? That Oliver is a furry before such a term existed, because he sees something in her that he can't really explain.
Right.
But is very drawn to it.
Yeah.
I think it's like, it's such a natural evolution between the two versions, because 42, it's like, it's all about how she is, for all intents and purposes, like a frigid woman who is like, not only is she afraid to kiss him, she doesn't really want to. She's scared that
if she gets aroused, she'll become, you know, a merciless killing panther.
Well, yes, but there's no, I feel like there's much less of a push and pull than there is in the 82, where it's like, I want you, but I can't have you because I'm afraid of what I might do. In the 42 version, she's like, no, I don't want you. Right. End of story.
Yeah, no, I think she's generally trying to make herself be asexual.
Yeah.
Whereas
she's trying to assimilate.
Irina is very sexual, but also kind of knows in the back of her mind, okay, there's only a certain point I can go so far with this.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like,
so much of it is like about, as you like, as the assimilation you said, it's like about like fitting in and like being embraced both by society, like as an immigrant, but also as like a queer person and into like heteronormative life. And like, that's sort of where you get so much of like the queer subtext where it comes out.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, it's, I feel like very clearly a movie that's about female sexuality and female agency, and like by centering a woman who not only like is having sexual marital problems, but like then has her therapist like get psychosexually interested in her. It's like a, it's so vividly about the fact that like this is something that I don't have a choice in whether I'm experiencing it, but I wish I did, and like how you deal with all of that. Of course, classic good for her movie, she deals with it by mauling the fuck out of a man.
Absolutely.
Even though it doesn't end
well. We have a constant thing on our show that we call, and it really started to come up with the Scream franchise.
And it's called, franchise.
It very much is. And it's called, Have You Considered My Penis? And this is where a guy tries to tell a woman the real solutions to her problems, no matter what they are his penis. And, you know, have you considered my penis?
And you can consider the coconut, or you can consider my penis.
Oh, yeah. God.
Sorry.
So this move, the 42 film. Is a very Have You Considered My Penis movie, because you not only have your lead, but now you have this psychologist who essentially becomes the real bad guy of the film.
Yeah.
Who's like,
not only do I want you to consider my penis, but I think you're too afraid of my penis. And I'm just going to put my penis out there, and we're going to prove to you how all this is in your mind. Yeah. And then, you know, he gets ripped up to death, and you're kind of like, well, fucked around and found out, my friend.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas there is no, they swapped out the, as far as an antagonist in the 82 version goes, they swapped out the psychiatrist for the brother, Paul,
who, you know, which is
very much into the idea of incest.
I think more than just a little, but I think put his whole penis into that.
Five minutes in, he's like, "Have you considered my penis? Yeah, I know I'm your brother,
but I love that. Like every time he hugs her, he kind of nuzzles at the back of her neck, and I'm like,
I don't like that.
It's like
that Folgers commercial all over again.
Oh my God, yes.
Never forget. An absolute classic.
But so there's not really anybody, really telling Irina that she, in the newer version, that she's crazy. I mean, even Oliver, when she tells him, oh, you know, I can't have sex with you. Would you still love me? And he's like, oh yeah, sure. Now, I mean, it's possible he doesn't really mean it, but, you know, he seems reasonably sincere at the time, just so besotted with her that he just thinks, yeah, this is probably something I can live with.
Yeah.
Whereas in the original, it's like, yeah, nope, yeah, right to the shrink you go, that's not acceptable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so, I think it because, like, the 82 version is so obviously, like, front loads the idea that, like, it's erotic, it's sexy. Like, this is a movie where, like, you want them to fuck so badly, or you're supposed to. That's like what is getting you through it. Like there's not as much need to be like, oh, we need to figure out what's wrong with this woman immediately, because it's like the horniness is what's getting you through the plot.
You were saying that the real villain, you know, is the psychiatrist and stuff like that. And I agree in terms of a story level, but for me, the real villain was Zeus. I have never, like, I have a hard time watching animals on screen sometimes just because of, like, you know, it's hard for me to see them suffer, but the 82 version was, like, very difficult to watch. I feel like the treatment
of the animals
and, like, how, like, little space they had in their cages, I found myself, like, viscerally, like, upset at the movie. I was like, please get the animals out of the zoo. This is so uncomfortable and upsetting. I really don't like that.
Did you like fist pump and cheer when Ed Begley Jr.'s got an arm ripped off?
Literally, yeah. I in my notes was like, thank fucking God that the Panthers are fighting back. I'm like, yes. I mean, like, if I have to be pro incest for Malcolm McDowell, cow, sure, like kill
these
people.
You'll take the anti-zoo rhetoric as like
I like Malcolm McDowell's character.
I thought
he added like his usual kind of weirdness to it.
Yeah.
Are you saying Malcolm McDowell is a little weird?
Not many people know this, but he's a little weird. But you know, one thing I really love in movies is when the person playing the villain just looks like they're loving every minute of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's smirking, he's just like hamming it up. In fact, it's kind of funny, like if you read the making of the movie, I mean, it's on Wikipedia, but he said that he had been reluctant to be cast in the movie because I had seen the original and didn't think it was a very good movie.
Damn.
And then that it was very overtly sexual and that he would get to play this campy, over-the-top villain, he's like, yeah, sign me the fuck up.
Yeah,
it's so good.
I think he adds the like layer of camp that you very desperately need, because as we mentioned, it's like the protagonist, especially, I mean, again, no disrespect to John Hurt, but like is very milquetoast. And like you do spend a lot of time just watching them like soulfully stare at each other from across the zoo.
I mean, I do appreciate that he saves the day with his penis at the end.
Hey, gotta love it. I also, like, I could not get over the fact that she was like, I need you to have sex with me to set me free, but first, we gotta get a little freaky. Like, there's just absolutely, it does not offer you a handhold at any point. They're just like, here you go, he's tying her to the bed.
Yeah.
She's gonna become a panther. I hope you enjoy it.
I got this rope right here.
Oh, it's so crazy. This abandoned lake house. Yeah.
Now, I just have a question for the group. So, we haven't mentioned her name, but so Natasha Kinski is in this. And like, obviously, the daughter of Klaus Kinski. Do we think that the whole family is just in general crazy and this was just her normal behavior and she wasn't acting? Or do we think that she was acting?
I do have an interesting anecdote that I found on trivia. So, you know, take this with a grain of salt. But like
a grain of cat food.
So is it Nastasia? Is that how you
Nastasia? Well, I butchered that.
Yep. And Paul Schrader had an affair during this movie.
Shock.
What a shock. But apparently he like fell for her so hard and then was so shocked when after filming ended, she sort of like ghosted him and stopped caring about him. And he went up to her at one point and was like, what's wrong? Like, I love you. I thought we had something real. And apparently she said, Paul, I sleep with all my directors, and with you, it was very difficult. Oh. And then walked away.
Damn.
Well, I remember when she was a thing, and she kind of played these sort of ingenue characters who was, was sort of both unaware and keenly aware of her effect on men.
Of course.
And she, I think she was barely 20 when she did this, and. Like, she had a thing with Roman Polanski for a little while, and always playing these very ripe young women that drive older men to distraction because she's, you know how people use that phrase, oh, she's beautiful or she's sexy, but she doesn't know it.
Yeah.
Which is, please barf, my God. But, like, yeah, she played a lot of these kinds of characters very early on in her career.
I mean, that is like it for so long. And I mean, even still, there's always been some version of the she's so beguiling, she's so incredible, but she doesn't know it. And like, this is such an interesting, like, overtly sexual slant where it's like it is showing female desire and it is showing that like she's aware that she really wants to like fuck this guy. But at the same time, she does have that like wide eyed innocence about her. I actually like the moments
eyes about her.
Oh, yeah. That transformation sequence,
good.
Wild.
The eye shots are phenomenal, I thought, in the 82 version.
Oh, yeah. I really like them better than, like, the prosthetic business, even though I like that as well. But the eyes with everything else,
it's
normal.
A little too heavy on goop.
Yeah.
It's one of those, it's a very delicate balance. The amount of goop you put on things, and also you have to photograph it well. I mean, put into the same light that this is the same year that Carpenter's The Thing comes out.
Yeah.
And they're not skimping on goop.
Oh, but no, one of the goopiest movies ever.
Yes, but it's lit in such a way they're really trying to hide the weenie. And I think in the aftermath of American Werewolf in London, you have people like, we're going to do this on camera. And it's kind of like, Should you?
Right, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
There was a quote that Robert Pattinson had a few days ago where he was talking about the bat suit and how I think it's just the same thing. It's like you have to know how to shoot something, and otherwise it's just going to look fake or like cosplay. And yeah, like it's interesting watching these two movies because with 1942, it's very much like in the shadows, and it's like how much can we hide? And because obviously it was like the limitations at the time,
just an insanely and budget small and everything, budget, right?
So
yeah,
it's like how can we hide things to like emphasize the horror? Whereas then in the 82, you're like, okay, well we have more money, so we can have stuff on camera, but like, how are we going to shoot it? And I think like the difference between there is so fascinating. I don't know. It's one of these movies I feel like could be also now remade again.
Yes.
I would be curious to see like a woman's maybe POV on it.
Yeah.
Perhaps. But
just,
you know,
just a suggestion.
Oh yeah, you could definitely get away now with, you know, sort of maybe Alice and Oliver swapping roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Alice is the one drawn to Irina, and you know, Oliver's one, hey, what the fuck? What about me? You
know? Yeah.
I love that.
No, I mean I mean there's something like deeply, I would say more. No, it's really in both. Like there is something like deeply like this woman is magnetic, mm-hmm, not really by her own designs, by like what other people put on her.
Yeah.
And I think like the relationship that she and the Alice character have in both movies, like I like that they spend a little more time together in the 82 version, even though it's more of like a, hey girl, yeah, don't really know you, but like we can hang out.
Yeah, I think that's more that she's trying to kind of size up the competition a little
bit. Exactly. Mm. Yeah. But she has that in the 82 version, that little diner scene that they have, or the bar, when like Alice has that one line where she's like, oh, you know, if men come up to you, you should just tell them that you're gay and they'll leave you alone. And Irina's like, oh, does that actually work? And she's like, no, not really. Like there's always an element of like you have something so, you know, feline, mm-hmm, and magnetic about you that you're not going to be able to like keep men away. And I sort of know that. I mean, even when Oliver confides in the Alice character in the 42 version, there's like an element of like, oh, but she's your wife, like she's the one you picked, right? Like, I don't understand, I've been in love with you, but I'm just the girl next door. She's like this amazing foreign bombshell, like I
yeah, but then in the end, who does he pick? He goes with Alice,
of course, right, because you have to go with the nice girl.
I love what he the scene where he tells Irina that he's leaving her. It's like he's like, I'm sorry, it's too late. It's like,
right,
it's like you can't generate like a shred of remorse or
anything.
You
know,
he's the worst. You know, he's the worst.
Feeling bad in any way, at least about hurting this woman's feelings. But no, he's just like, Cash, you should have fucked me. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I think it would be really interesting to see like a version of this movie done without the emphasis on like that magnetism, or to have it be more evenly distributed, like you said, Gina, like potentially from like a more queer perspective, to show that it's not specifically with men, it's like this magnetism towards people. Because it's like I really do, you know, for all of Simone's potentially good or bad acting choices, I do love that like she's kind of not like bringing anything to the table in terms of why people should be interested in her. And I think it really adds to this idea that like, is it about the fact that if you feel sexual as a woman, that's just not something you're allowed to feel? Is it about the fact that if you don't want to feel sexual towards anyone at all and you feel that pressure? Or is it sort of like the in-between where you feel sexual as a woman, but it's also towards the wrong people? Like it's mm-hmm, in a queer way, and like that's also not allowed, and well, also like, bad. Yeah.
And like how people look at you, I think, is so much about it too, is like in terms like, because as you're saying, she's not necessarily bringing a lot of acting to the table, so a lot of it is coming from like other people sort of saying stuff to her, like or like when the woman comes up to her and she like share that like sister line, and like they look at each other,
that
you're like
scene.
Okay, so that's a little gay, or you have scene. Like people being like, she looks like this, or like, you know, because she is, you know, an immigrant, she's obviously like being othered and labeled as such. And so like so much is being projected on her that like then when she says something or like has an ounce of personality or whatever, it has so much more weight to it. And because like everything that she ends up saying is basically like, I can't do this because of blank inside of me, or like,
yeah, I'm
I can't
attracted
be drawn
to the darkness
of life. Ooh. I can't consummate this, you know. And then you're like, oh, this is standing out because so much is being thrust upon her in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one moment though that really seems to come alive for Simone, where she digs into this role that she's been cast into, and you can really feel a lot of heat, is when she has essentially cornered Jane Randolph in the pool.
Yes.
She turns on the light. Now, supposedly these two, in a wonderful reflection of the 82 version, did not get along. So she's relishing this moment in which she's holding power over her on-screen rival. And there's a heat between the two of them in that scene that is real. You can read that they have an emotional connection, even if it's negative. And that's, you know, that's the capper to what is a pretty standout feat of cinema, to make shadows and reflections of water somehow look threatening, because you could honestly say that there is no actual cat person in this motion picture. You could read it that Irina, who has pilfered the key to the panther in the zoo, is unleashing it on people, and the cat's just like, well, point me to who you want to kill, and I'll make that happen.
Sure. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And that's like half the fun of the 42 version, is like, even to the very end when it's like the panther is the one that strikes down Irina, and then the panther is killed by a car. It's like, it's still playing in literally like the shadows of not quite knowing whether this was like psychological or real. But it's like, she still gets her goal. Like, I love that fucking show me, I consider my penis therapist man, like, ends up dead, because it feels like a definitive triumph for her, regardless of whether like it's her coming into like her own and realizing like, oh, I actually can turn into a panther and maybe this is something that like can be helpful, or whether, you know, she can just command cats at will. We love to see it. But I think that that moment between them and in the pool scene is my favorite moment from the 82 version as well. Yeah. And I love sort of like after Natasha Kinski has like decided that she's going to embrace the fact that she is going to turn into a panther when she has sex. Like, the look in her eyes when she shows up at that pool is so much more mature. Like, the ingenue side of her is completely gone.
Oh, yeah.
I love like how she looks.
Like, she's not here anymore.
I love how she looks in that scene, because she's really like obviously incredible looking.
Yeah. Oh my god.
And I
she's
love
staring daggers
to see her play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I like. I think the pool scenes in both. And Schrader said that too. And he was like, "Why change something that was like so good in the first one?"
Yeah.
And like, I completely agree. It's like, the pool scenes are definitely the two standouts from both, for sure.
And I think that like, it's always sort of exciting when really incredibly looking and incredibly feeling cinema comes out of things like budgetary restraints, which is why like all of sort of like the playing in the 42 version is so effective, because it's like, they simply had no other option. They had no choice but to like get really creative. And like the Luton bus scare is one of those things that is so familiar that we don't even recognize it as like it being
like coming from something.
Exactly.
Right.
It's just such a hallmark of horror. Yeah.
And yet that 82 version, the trolley, actually, I jumped.
Yeah.
You know, I'm watching it in my office. And I'm like, oh no, that still fucking works. If you do it right, it works, and it sets your nerves off. It's infinitely better than I'm jogging through the park and this enormous dog comes up to me and like, how you doing, boy? Like, oh
yeah,
the fuck out of here with this.
No, I totally agree, because it's sort of like the idea that you as the audience aren't being scared, the character is scaring themselves, and it like reflects back onto you. Because it's like, and it's using atmospheric things like the bus or the trolley stopping to like jolt you, as opposed to something that like no matter what is gonna scare you, like a dog coming out of nowhere. Apparently that same sequence in the 42 version is also like sort of credited with the sort of like off-screen disturbances that end up just being a cat rifling through like a garbage can or something like that, that hallmark of horror when it's like, there's something moving in the alley.
What is
God. And then it's just a cat. Or So, hey, there you go.
I love that. So many cats.
Gotta.
So many cats.
Yeah.
All the cats.
Should we mention just in, I think like maybe go 42 to 82, yeah, just like a quick breeze, but I feel like we should mention that the writer of 42 was also gay. DeWitt,
yes,
Bodine, not sure on DeWitt pronunciation.
Bodine sounds, yeah, correct.
But I feel like that was such a fun discovery that I also didn't know going in, because I thought so much of it was just going to be subtext. And so that you wonder if, you know, while writing it, if it was like sort of an intentionality thing, or if it's like being, you know, an outsider being able to relate to like this woman's experience and like embellishing that like within the script, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's always nice to talk about classic films in regards to like the visibly queer people that were working, right, either on screen or behind the scenes, because it like does color the films, totally, like in, yeah, a very particular way. I think that this script, the 42 script, is very obvious about the fact that it's like, there is something inside of me that's going to be unleashed,
yes,
sexually, and like I'm not comfortable with it, and mm-hmm, I know you're sure as fuck not, right, going to be comfortable with it.
Society at large is like, no.
Yeah, yeah. So I think like it's very much there on the page, and you know, it's, horror is always about this.
Oh, of course.
Horror,
yeah,
is always about using supernatural aims for real world issues.
Of course.
Not a new,
yeah,
concept. We
Hot
all know
take.
This.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think that that is definitely like an important aspect of the 42.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you add to that, you have Luton, who, right, it was famously, he did not like to be touched.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that. Certainly DeWitt is bringing in the queer element. And then you have both Turneau and Luton who came over to America to make film, and dealing with an American society in the height of World War II,
yep,
right,
not wanting to look or act in a way which would call you out as not American. And mm-hmm, you add all those things into one another. And so much of this existing in the shadows, it's just very ripe. Like all those emotions and all those feelings are woven into the tapestry of this motion picture.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if I'm jumping ahead to comparing and contrasting, the 82 version is, mm-hmm, extremely heterosexual.
It was, oh, yeah, very deeply, deeply.
To a fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You may want to take their foot off the gas of the heterosexuality.
And that might, yeah, be because it was Paul Schrader, whose movies, right, are very, heterosexual male oriented, even,
exactly,
not even so much. I mean, I feel like the movie, even though much of the attention and the action is centered on Irina, you're still supposed to view her from Oliver's perspective.
Oh, of course.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's definitely, I hate to use the term male gaze unless very necessary, but like it is one of those movies where you get, and I think Gina, like it's part of what you were saying about, she is not supposed to know that she's beautiful, but she is so clearly beautiful that it's like, every time,
how do you not know?
Yeah, like there's no way, unless this was from like, you know, a man's,
yeah,
omniscient perspective, that you, like, you would believe that this woman is just walking through the world like,
right,
living,
right,
this,
well,
dichotomy.
Everything you need to know is how many of her scenes she's clearly not wearing a bra. But yet you're supposed to be, she's such a, you know, babe in the woods and all that, she, you know, just doesn't understand what you know, you, how her walking around without a bra would just drive men crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I know that when I go hunt raw rabbits for sport in the woods in the middle of the night, I have to do it naked. Like, I simply must.
Well, it's just cleaner that way.
I mean. Yeah. Of course.
Right.
Yeah. At least that is, in my opinion, less egregious than than Annette O'Toole taking a swim in a public pool completely.
Yeah, that was
topless.
What was horrifying part of that scene, is she just stripping down to her undies and getting into that public pool.
Right.
Well, I will put it this way. I think she's about to change into her swimming suit, and she is so frightened she jumps into the pool with what she's got on.
That's possible.
I would say
that
that
much
is the intention. Yes, honestly, again, not to nitpick, I was more mad that they like fully had her in a running sequence and then had her take off her running attire and be wearing a normal bra. I was like, excuse me. It's my number one. I promise I won't harp on it too much, but it's my number one pet peeve in movies is like that kind of stuff. I remember watching Those Who Wish Me Dead with Angelina Jolie, a tactical professional firefighter who wears lacy lingerie under her. I could not get over it. It drives me crazy.
That kind of comes from the same place of male screenwriters who think that when women are alone at home, they just hang around in lingerie.
Of course.
Or you've got Friday the 13th Part 5 disease, where you believe that the instant a woman is alone in front of a mirror, she's like, well, I got to see what I've got going on. Let's doff the shirt.
Better check. Make sure nothing's moved around since this morning.
It's just like a fit check, but just your boobs.
Your body.
Right.
But yeah, the Irina in it, like I buy more that the Irina in the 42 version isn't just, you know, afraid of her sexuality. She's repressed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Irina nature is very aware of her sexuality and very much wants to explore it, but she knows she kind of has to restrain it. So she's very much a man's, you know, kind of idealized virgin. That was a Freudian slip right there.
Well, hey,
she is the virgin.
Yeah.
Idealized version of a virgin.
Yeah,
where
right, yeah.
you know she is aware of her effect on men, but then she isn't at the same time.
But she's and held then, off for me because I'm special,
right? Yeah, right. You know, she you know hasn't found the right guy, but looks like I'm the right guy. Wow, you
know? Wouldn't you know it?
You know, and you know she's an innocent, but also you know doesn't wear underwear apparently.
And, yeah,
and know, she's a real cat in bed.
Right. Yeah, knows exactly what to do first time out, you know.
Right,
apparently so good at it that, you know, Oliver sleeps through most of her transformation.
Yeah.
You know, she's
that
shaking.
Is what I thought was hilarious, is like this woman is transforming into a panther and
she's
you're just gonna be knocked out?
She's like shaking and panting and shuddering, right. And he's just like
she's having like a fucking furball. Like what is going on here?
Yeah.
So much of this is people, as you said, like people thinking that they're special, and deep down you're like, no,
you're a cardboard cutout.
You're nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. John Hurd did remind me of discount Greg Kinnear in this movie. I think 50% of it is probably the haircut, but he's quite good looking. Everyone in this movie is very.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's extremely attractive. Yeah.
Bunch of hotties.
I told this dumb joke to Brooke offline, but it's like the yossified thing I think can apply in three senses, both from like the yossification of 42 to 82 in terms of just like looks,
yep,
but then also the catification of these girls where they're getting yossified when they turn into panthers.
Well, they become like, I think especially like you actually have a point,
I know,
in that like the 82 version it's like Irina basically deciding that she's cool with turning into
exactly.
a panther if it means having sex with this man is like what frees her.
Right.
Sexually.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's
deeper, you know, it's a dumb joke, but it's deep.
But it is deep. Yeah.
Layers.
But there's the other component of like John Hurd's Oliver has not like pulled the trigger on being in a serious relationship up until the point he can tie up the woman he loves. And then when she transforms into a panther, he's like, come live with me in the zoo and I will feed you raw meat. Like, what kind of fucking relationship is this?
Right.
Yeah.
You fucking freak.
I actually found that deeply odd because she says very clearly, like, have sex with me so I can turn back into a panther. I want to be with my people. And it's like, you're the only panther in that zoo, girl. Like, right. I don't know if that was supposed to be... I don't know if it's just like, you know, a screenwriting fault or if it's supposed to be a subversion of like, oh, this man took control over her eventually, or if it's just kind of part of like the weird erotic soup of this
movie. I thought was funniest part about the ending was that apparently him and Alice get back together.
Yeah.
And And I'm like, I guess Alice is cool with him having the woman he actually loves in a cage.
Right.
Yeah. But maybe like she doesn't know.
Like a psychosexual fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess she doesn't
see
actually.
Any transformation. She doesn't really
yeah, I guess she
know.
Doesn't actually know about the whole people turn into panthers.
Into panthers.
Thing.
Yeah.
It's so weird, the world building that gets like thrust upon
the
82
yes.
versus what you have in 42. Because 42, it's like not, I mean, it's definitely bizarre world building and it's like, you know, witchcraft and all
curse.
That stuff, right?
Yes.
But like she traveled with that statue, like, okay,
right,
sure,
yeah, yeah.
But like, where in your luggage did you put that?
Yeah, it's a horrible, yes. disturbing statue of a man literally spearing a yeah. cat.
Upsetting.
On
but then like
point. Yeah.
82, it's like this, but then we're gonna add in the like the Malcolm McDowell
we
and then there's all
incestuous.
These like lore. It's just like, oh yes. my god, you went so far with the lore.
There's
here
a lot of lore. I do visually I love those like desert
I,
sequences.
Oh my god, yeah, when you have like the Marauder score going and everything,
yeah.
it's like
yeah,
that is cool.
The, yeah, you've got that jamming score. It's so mm-hmm. good. So 80s,
so much
but,
synth.
But
so
in a
80s
way.
Extreme synth. Yes.
Giorgio Moroder is peeking up over a mound of cocaine to make
oh.
this music.
The whole, I think everyone on set was.
And then you have Albert Whitlock, the oldest of old school, you know, painters
yeah.
doing that vista in the back. Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, it has that old school relaxing feeling of this is fake. And
yeah.
it's like,
oh,
yeah. All of this is fucking fake. I don't need
right.
realism in a movie called Cat People.
Yes, exactly.
That could not agree
being
more.
Said, I do not understand the sort of ancient Sumeria. Well, we tie some virgins up to trees and see if we can make some cat people. And how does that equal $?
Well,
dollar
I think
sign?
That the
sure.
I think yeah. that the women were supposed to, I think that the women were supposed to be sacrifices.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah.
And then one's like, I like this one. Let's
and
see.
Then, yeah, one of the panthers is like, say.
Listen, I've
and,
eaten
and then,
a bunch.
And then Malcolm McDowell's born.
Yeah, surprise. Yeah.
And it was weird. It was actual actor Malcolm McDowell, not the character.
Yeah.
We all know this.
Many people don't know this, but Malcolm McDowell is, in fact, actually a cat people.
Yeah.
Oh,
I thought
God.
The panther choice in general in both was like such an interesting thing in terms of like big cats. Like I understand why, but like I feel like cheetahs are much more are panthers the most seductive of big
cats? I
think
yes, because it's like they're very rare because they're just leopards
right.
with
with their coloration.
Like
yeah.
a coloration.
Do you like
differential?
I was such a big sorry, not to tangent. Were you a cat, like a big cat?
Yes.
Like growing up, I was obsessed with tigers. Like white tigers
yes.
and tigers were like my jam.
I know a lot about like all the big cats. It's like trapped in like the 10-year-old
oh, absolutely.
Nerdy.
Did you ever like those zoology books?
Of course.
Sorry. Okay, great.
Yes.
Anyways.
But
sorry.
Like, I do think that like panthers are known for like being very slinky, mm-hmm. like sort of they do like live in
yeah.
the shadows. I think the idea of like this huge like black cat is like
is, yeah.
the secret aspect.
If she was
and
like
I,
a...
I,
yeah.
I
go
think
for
they,
it.
I think they use it a little bit better in the 42 version
I
because
agree.
Irina
yeah.
gets that coat that very much
yes.
looks like mm. a melanated leopard hide. And they're able to evoke like, well, if it's her, it's this, but you could, if she were hunched in the right position, you might think she's a giant black
right.
leopard. And yeah. it works a little bit better there. Whereas I'm with you guys in terms of like that zoo setup is just like people should be on charges. It's fucking
yes.
insane.
It's,
it's
disgusting.
Depressing.
Yeah, yeah,
it really
yeah.
is. And then you add John Larroquette, America's favorite sleazeball. the zoo executive was like, is it cheaper to maybe kill this
yes.
cat? Because maybe we could save a couple bucks. What do you think?
That conversation was crazy. I was like, what? Like the politics of the zoo like
yeah,
coming into
wild.
Play here. Like we should just kill this gigantic creature who's probably, you know, foreign and endangered. Like let's just get rid of it. It'll save us so much more money. You're like, pump the brakes. Stop.
Yeah. He does get slugged in the face though. So
that's true.
Yeah.
A win for all of us.
Yes.
I think that like we'll never really know, but I would be very interested to at least attempt to dig into Schrader's process and be like, what was it about the themes of the 42 version that made you like not be interested in that?
I could tell you it was
Pepto
Bismol mixed with whiskey and a mound of cocaine.
feel you on the cocaine front. I think that is honestly probably a very good guess.
You could probably ask him on Facebook.
Yeah. Like we said, it's just, it is, the 82 version is like deeply, deeply heterosexual, but yeah. also like doesn't really retain any of the sort of like push and pull and repression that mm-hmm. the 42 version had, which I think like really makes it just so entirely different.
Yeah. And I mean, like, if you want to have a queer read on it, I think like just from like an afar, it's just like, you know, people holding in this thing yes. from them yeah. and like it's like an oppression, like a repression of something. Mm-hmm. So if you want to like give that, especially like to the 82 version, like if you're trying to pull things, you know, whereas like the 42 is, as we've just said, it's just so much more clear.
It's so much more clear, but yeah. it's always a relationship, I think, between like being sexually empowered as a woman and being sexually empowered as someone who is like outside of maybe like heterosexual society,
right?
And it obviously like works better in the 42 version because that was at the point where it was still like, women don't orgasm, we all know this, but maybe not that extreme, but you know what I mean. Yeah. And I think like it's very weird to not have Irina really like get that in the 82 version, like even after she pops her cherry, and
does
like
she meow at all while they're having sex or no? Because I feel like that's a missed opportunity.
I would assume yes. But yeah. that's
at least McDowell gets a couple of repressed growls.
Oh yeah, he has some
when he's sort of like slinking around on the bed and is basically like doing like interpretive cat movement. I was extremely into that. I thought that was a great choice because you're yeah. like, that's what I want yeah, no, out totally. Of this
yeah,
movie.
I want a person looking like a cat.
Yes, yeah. I want someone like literally slinking around and jumping off of balconies.
Totally.
But I think about that scene after Irina pops her cherry when she goes into the bathroom and is sort of like examining the blood that was. Yeah. Like behind it being like, ooh, am I into
tastes
this?
It, yeah.
Do I like the fact that I now have like unlocked my sexual potential? But it's just, it's all done from such a weird lens.
Yeah.
Not to say really I dislike the movie though. I actually thought it was a great time.
Yeah. I just think you have to sort of, I think it just viewing these things, you have to view them as we've been kind of doing. It's just in contrast and in conversation with each other, you know. I think that's ultimately sort of like the big takeaway.
Schrader uses a deaf end here, like it's hard to out direct the original.
Yeah,
so
right.
His goal is to, well, I'm going to do all the things that you couldn't do in the 42 version,
right?
So much panda content.
Yes, much more transgressive, you know. I'm gonna have people eat their own melted flesh. I'm going to have, you know, Nastassia Kinski hunt a rabbit in the noon with predator vision, which for my money, as much as I love the 94 wolf, like this is a lot hotter than
Jack Nicholson. That performance and movie are so unhinged. Just speaking of like anamorph movies, my God.
Yeah. Listen, there's.
I love it. It's fucking audacious. It's crazy. So deeply weird.
It's great casting though, honestly, like in both movies, because you look at Jack Nicholson and you're like, you know what, I could see him as a werewolf.
Yeah. It's weirder to have him be a guy who's like ordering a steak over a hotel phone,
right,
than him running around with giant werewolf teeth.
Yes.
Yeah, you're like, this makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's why her casting, Kinski's casting, I feel like I do like it, because she does like models, and I think like the way that she walks and everything, it is
yes.
very cat-like. Like she has slinky. These striking features. Like you yeah. just look at the poster and you're like, this is a person who maybe could transform into a cat.
She's very,
you know,
feline looking. Yeah. And both of the sort of like the cat women that come up to her in both versions also have that like extremely like feline look. I mean, like cat eye makeup, like the furs, it's everything. And I think like there is something like very arresting about it, that you
definitely
totally get it. I just wish the 82 version leaned more into her being like, I'm into this power, like I can be in control of this. I think the ingenue nature, just simply put, works better when you're just trying to repress so much of everything at the same time, and you don't have the freedom to break free that you did in the 80s. So there you go. But I really had a good time.
No, no, same here. I think both were great. Should we mention David Bowie doing the
David Bowie
on 82, which I feel like, hey, that adds a little bit of some queer element, you know?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear a Bowie pop up. Was not expecting
made
it.
Made me happy. It's very like, it's very intense too at the end, yes, where it's just, it's like, and Bowie.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah. Gina, Patrick, is there anything else that you desperately want to talk about that we forgot to mention?
I think that we got, they're two very different movies, despite having a core plot. I think that the later one is a lot more fun.
Mm.
But I think on a stylistic level, the original is nicer to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think mostly as far as stylistic choices that weren't lifted directly from the original, you know, the 1982 version, you know, it makes Nastasha Kinski look even better than she already did. And it's also a very nice travelogue for New Orleans.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Such an interesting choice. That was like my big thing when it started. I was like, wow, they are going hard on New Orleans in this movie.
Yeah.
It's a character in the film, not to be trite, but
no, totally.
You know, it's an underutilized locale at that point for film. Yeah. And you're shooting it at a point where it's never going to quite look like that again. It's no matter how it has modernized over the years, it has never looked quite that on the edge of the Wild West as it does in the 82 version.
I think it works so well too, because it's like, it's sort of like an unrestrained city. There's like definitely these aspects of like the supernatural, mm-hmm, and sort of like magic adjacent things that are sort of woven into what people think of when they think of the city. It's good. And it sort of has like, this is like a sweaty movie, like
very
like
sweaty
physically, yes, visually. Yeah, yeah. So I think it works. Like, you want these people that are like really horned up for each other to like be like sweating in the Louisiana sun. Yeah.
No, I love that.
Yeah. Do you want to hear a little bit about how these movies did?
I do. Can we have two quick things? Our notes on production, I feel like on the 42 one that really stood out to me just in like light research and stuff like that was like, one, the editor, Robson, thought that he was assigned to this because he had worked on Wells's The Ambersons and like everyone was being punished for that. And I think that it's pretty funny that he was just like, fuck, I'm being sent from Orson Welles down to Cat People, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm, it's a very well-edited movie.
I mean, it's incredibly well-animated. And then, speaking of releases, when this movie had like a test screening, how it opened with a Disney cartoon about kittens and how people were meowing and then started meowing when the movie started playing, I think is fucking hilarious.
Wow.
And I think that that's sort of like the energy that we need to bring back. But I think it also ties into Cat's rowdy screenings.
I was going
to
say.
And that just maybe cat movies in general just bring meows out of people.
That was the energy that was brought to Cat's 2019.
It was.
Every available screen.
Maybe, here's a question. Is Cat's 2019 hornier than Cat's 1982?
No, nothing is possibly hornier than Cat's
1982. Yeah, no, I mean, sorry. like the one cat, I don't remember his name, but the one who kept staring at the lead girl the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Mistopheles.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I guess it's Mr. Mistopheles.
The magical Mr. Mistopheles, yes. An icon.
He comes up as way creepier than Paul, who literally wants to commit incest.
Yes. I could not agree more.
And I don't think I've found anything more frightening in either the 42 or 82 version than Judi Dench looking me straight in the fucking eye for 10 minutes.
Yep.
And just delivering poetry, slam poetry, while three other people in full cat makeup are like, let me stroke you. Let me stroke this party. Like that. I'm traumatized from that shit. And it wasn't just the edible that stalked.
I should have known, Jordan, that we wouldn't have get through this episode without a Cats 2019 reference.
Look, there's no other movie that brought me such cinematic enjoyment.
I know.
Just
I'm well aware.
Just truly an experience.
God.
This brings up a question. Does McCavity, who's accused at one point in that film of committing every human crime, does that include incest?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. McCavity.
Well, then it tops Cat People 82.
So hey.
It's certainly creepier.
McCavity saw Malcolm McDowell and was like, I have some notes.
Okay, I would watch that crossover.
Oh, God.
Oh, all right.
Anyways, yeah, so how did they do?
Well, okay, Cat People 42, giant hit. Number one for a very long time. They had to push other releases because it was doing so well. That back in the days when RKO. You could do that. It did. Mm. It did. It is so crazy that, like, the 82 version was the same year as The Thing, which was another, like, RKO, like, re-exploration, right? Remake. Isn't it RKO?
Universal bought the back catalog and said, how can we exploit the living hell out of this? So this and Cat People were their big stabs at using RKO's catalog as a launching point. So when people say that we're too IP obsessed, it's like it's fucking always been that way.
We've been IP obsessed.
Unfortunately, the 1982 version of Cat People did not make very much money and continues to live on as a little bit of a cult classic. But it's not like there was so much that put into it and then it was a massive flop. Right. Like it was a flop, but it could have been more disastrous.
Yeah.
But OG Cat People 42 is in the Criterion Collection.
Love to see it. Well, it got such a significant sort of reappraisal.
Yeah.
Which I think is like so many people, there's so much writing about it online and just people have such like an enjoyment of the movie just because there's so much you can kind of pick up from it versus maybe like when it was released.
I think if I had to pick like some sort of classic to like re-examine and like potentially like remake creatively, it would probably be this. Because I think like there are just so many interesting nuggets that you can explore. Some explored in the 82, some very much not. But like I do think it's a really like thematically rich movie and like has the added benefit of being like so visually striking and like affecting for the time. Yeah. That I think it would be really interesting to look
at. No, I think that's actually a good take. Because like I mean Frankenstein we've seen so many times, Dracula so many times, Wolfman so many times, you know.
Where's the Cat People? Come on.
That's true. Yeah. And let's I mean like look, go. I love like all those like the Bride of Frankenstein, but it's like one of those movies that is so good because of how it was at the time that you're like, I don't know what you now like how do you reinterpret that, you know?
Yep.
So it's a good take.
Hey, what can I say? Okay, Jordan.
Yes.
Would you like to guess the letterbox?
Ooh, I would. Okay. So for 42, I'm gonna say that this is a well liked movie. Let's go with like a 3.6.
It is a 3.7.
Oh.
Pretty good though.
That's a pretty good guess, yes.
I will bring you now to the sequel,
Cat People, 1982. I'm going to say less liked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say 2.9.
3.1.
Mm.
So you're in the right zone.
I was in the right zone, yes.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's a smattering. I don't think Cat People 1982 necessarily has people that stand for it, but it definitely has a lot of appreciators.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
some fans, yeah.
Yeah.
So where on the queer quadrant
do we think these are landing
for you?
Okay, I'll make this quick since we have 8 people or
eight
rankings we got to do. So I feel like given everything that was like clearly at play with the 42 version and sort of like how I don't know, it just has that sort of like old movie playing in the shadows literally and figuratively type deal to it, I'm gonna say 3.5 stars. And sorry to the 82 version but like 1 star for David Bowie and campiness.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I am, yeah.
Okay.
How about you?
I was going to give a 3.5 as well for the 1942. I think that, I mean, like having obviously a gay writer, huge.
Yeah.
I think its cultural reappraisal is big. I know. I think that there's just something inherently queer about the film. And I mean, like, obviously there's the outsider read that you could have, whether that be like because she's an immigrant or because she's a queer person. But either way, I think there's so much rich subtext in it that it's kind of impossible to avoid. For 82, I'm given 0.5 star.
Less generous.
I thought it was
me.
Just very hetero, but like, does it make it like less fun? I had fun with both movies, but I just think it's just a fascinating. I like when we get to do these sort of episodes because it is nice to see a compare and contrast between two very starkly different things.
Yeah, and as we know, the QQ rating is not a reflection of necessarily
it's just
how
we
feel.
It's just go with your gut.
It's just go with your gut. Yeah. That being said, Patrick, Gina, how are you guys feeling?
I think Cat People, the 42 version, has a lot of layers to it. And then you have the costume design and you have the way people are placed in frame. I mean, it's 71 minutes of just gorgeousness. Really, with the exception of just not having a very high quotient of hot dudes to look at, I would still call it a four, man. There's a lot going on there. It is. It's 71 minutes. It's not going to take a lot of your time. As far as like the queerness of 82, man, I'm going to bring up the phrase heterosexual miscalculation.
Love that. We'll keep that in the pocket. Yeah.
There's like, outside of very attractive people to look at, it's not really along those veins. You're down to David Bowie and just Nastassia Kinski being able to turn on anyone in a room.
Right, exactly.
So I give it a one. What say you, Gina?
Yeah, I honestly, from watching the 42 version after the 82 version, long after, I kind of couldn't help but see it through the veil of when, you know, Irina, you know, says, well, I can't kiss you, you know, which is obviously I can't have sex with you, that she's only, you know, specifically speaking of Oliver.
Yeah.
But to listen to you explain it, that she might just mean, you know, I just can't kiss you because I'm not attracted to you in that way. It makes sense to me. It's 100% plausible to me that, you know, it could be read that way, or it might have been deliberately done to be read that way. So yeah, I would give it, you know, four. And yeah, again, 1982. Yeah, no, this is a very straight movie made for straight people. I think that they could have turned, you know, the thing. They had a very good opportunity and might have been able to get away with it as early as 1982 to kind of have a little kind of playful thing between her and Alice as well.
Oh, for sure.
But in the end, it's pretty clear. You know, Alice, like I said earlier, is just kind of sizing up the competition as being nice to her because, you know, just to, you know, stay in Oliver's good graces. And it doesn't work because Oliver shuts her down in that one conversation in his truck where she keeps trying to bring up whether the situation with Irina is good for him or not. That dynamic is completely different than it is in the 42 version. Like, as soon as he, you know, decides that Irina's the one he wants to be with, he is freezing Alice out, like, immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is odd that apparently, you know, when this is all over, she has, you know, let that slide and is back, you know, kissing on him and, you know, in front of everybody, which is very odd, but, you know.
Mm. Yeah, what can you do? Very straight movie, but a very good time nonetheless.
Absolutely.
And 42 is a classic for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You could do, you know, you could throw both of these on back to back in the same evening and have a great time.
Yeah.
Because the first one is so short.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's great. I love a 73 minute movie.
A sexy thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Don't make them like that anymore.
Oh, no.
But maybe one day. I don't know. We'll see.
The return of the under 90.
I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. We'll see what happens. Patrick, Gina, thank you so much for being here. It was truly a pleasure.
Sure, thank you.
A delight.
You guys are the best. Obviously, everyone should listen to Kill by Kill, but if they want
Cat by Cat.
I also want to give the biggest shout out humanly possible to Dish by Dish. As a huge Hannibal fan, I greatly, greatly enjoy everything about it.
Do you like Hannibal?
I do like Hannibal.
That's shocking.
Some people don't know this.
I did not know that. Wow. It's almost like you've made it a part of your personality.
It's almost like it's my favorite television show ever.
Which is a little scary.
I know. That's why I don't tell people unless I know that they're like on board with
it
is. Anyway, you guys are the best. And if people want to hear more from you, where should they go to find you?
Kill by Kill is available pretty much wherever you get podcasts. We're on socials, our Twitter at Kill by Kill Pod. We have a Facebook group. We are on Instagram. We're all over the place. We have a Patreon where we do listener suggestions every month. And we are also, people kept asking us to, because we had already gone through Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street for multi-part episodes. And they wanted us to do Halloween, and we did not. So we are now going through all the Halloween movies as commentaries every month as a bonus episode. So the end of the month, you get a Halloween commentary. In January, it was Halloween 4, the most Orem, Utah of all the Halloween movies. If that's a plus, it is not. And and of course, Dish by Dish will be back this spring. Currently, our off week thing is Kill by Kill After Dark, where we talk about an erotic movie. And I think everyone, when we started talking about this on Twitter, was like, is this an After Dark? Like, no.
Better. Certainly could be. Yeah. Could
Gina, where can people find you on these here internets?
I write about movies and television at thespool.net. I do tend to lean towards horror movies, but also, you know, whatever is assigned to me. So,
dude, she's a fantastic writer. She's underplaying how fucking good she is.
No, yes. Hey, you. Be proud.
Use cat people, you know, pump yourself up. Use that confidence.
Yeah. You know, we're not nearly as exciting, but no. You can also find us on Twitter.
Yes.
I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant, and this podcast is also on Spotify and Apple and wherever else you care to get your podcasts. Please rate us on Spotify, a brand new feature.
We love it.
We love to
see
it.
5 meows only.
Mm-hmm. Drop us a review. Mm-hmm. Drop us a subscribe. You can tweet at us. Tell us what you think about these movies, how incredibly horny they are. Well, one of them. Yep. And what you might like to see us cover in the future.
And what are we covering in the future?
Next week, we are diving into a certified classic.
Ooh, baby.
And talking Rebel with a Cause. Rebel without a cause.
Oh my God, he has so many causes now.
Next week, we're talking
all these damn woke movies. Now he's got causes.
God,
he's a social justice warrior.
Yeah, Rebel with a Cause.
Good Lord. Next week is Rebel Without a Cause. I'm very excited. So tune in for that.
And Brooke, do you have anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Meow, meow, hiss, hiss, cat army, rise up.
Wow.